Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You are listening to the GAA Hour, brought to you by Sports Joe and Shore. 72-hour non-stop protection, tested to the limits. Shore, it won't let you down.
Hello everyone, you're all very welcome to the show, brought to you by Sports Joe and Shore, 72-hour protection. It's our first episode with Shore as partners, and it's great to have them on board for the rest of the championship. I'm delighted to say that, as well as Lee Costello, my usual partner in crime, we have a GAA legend in with us today, a Cork legend, one of the last great dual players, an All-Ireland champion, a man who has one of the most unique careers that the GAA has ever seen, really, and that's Aidan Walsh. Aidan Walsh, Aidan, how's things?
Good, lads. Thanks for having me.
No bad at all. Great to have you today, Aidan. You're 3 years out of the game with Cork, but you're still very much involved. You're making hurls, and you're playing for your club, both hurling and football. So how's that going?
Yeah, good. No, it was a big change, right? Finishing up with the hurlers that time. I suppose for the 10 or 12 years before that, it was all revolving around intercounty, and then all of a sudden, when it's over, then you kind of have to jump into normal life. And I've been very lucky, as you said, with the club. We're always very busy every year. We're lucky that we get to later stages of the championship nearly every year, so that keeps us going. And doing the hurlies and a few bits as well as my job. So I'm fully immersed in GAA nearly all the time.
Yeah, definitely. How's the hurley making going? I know some hurley makers are struggling with the Ash dieback and so on, but you're still...
It's going well. I'm very lucky that they would be kind of popular enough, so I'll be kept busy. But I suppose it's becoming more and more of an issue at the moment with the whole Ash dieback disease, and unfortunately it's becoming more scarce, which is increasing the prices of the materials. So it's a case of, I'd say, maybe a year or two left of hurleys made of ash. And you can just see there from other hurley makers around the country, they're trying to find alternatives with the materials, like, say, I think Tarpey are doing bamboo and stuff. So, yeah, no, unfortunately, it's coming to an end. But, we'll just have to find something else to do.
Yeah, you'd be looking for the next kind of bamboo yourself or something like
I won't go into anything other than ash. But, okay. No, I just have to move on to another. I'm looking at that. I have a business degree and stuff, so I'll find something to keep me occupied.
Okay.
A dangerous enough job, though. Did you ever get any injuries doing it?
Yeah, I've had a few bad ones. I remember the 2 weeks before in 2018 or 19, I cut my finger, I cut it off the top of my finger with a planer. I was planing hurley, my hand slipped into it, and the top of my finger was just hanging off, so it's that set me back. That was right 2 weeks or 2 weeks before the Kilkenny game, and drummer Hoggy got 3-10. Yes. Yeah, I'd get surgery, and I actually ended up cutting off bone and everything off my finger. But that was probably the worst one. There was a few small ones as well, nothing too crazy, but that was probably the worst.
That's I'm squeamish now.
How have you found it since retiring from the county? I suppose club GAA, it's picked up to the extent now that it's probably similar enough to the commitment that you made when you were a county player.
Yeah, no, to be honest, I found it difficult enough, tough, because as I said, it's your life or your life revolves around it. Mm. Like you're just between preparing, recovering, and everything you do is all to put yourself in the best position to play. So when I finished in, I probably still thought I had something to offer. Like, I was still only 30, like, but I suppose I had a lot of miles in the clock. I was there since I was 19, and I suppose being from Kentucky, you're an hour away from the city, like, so it's the commuting was, you know, it does take its toll. Say so you'd leave around 4, half 4 a day, and won't be back till around 11 o'clock that night, because between being a training hour and a half, 2 hours before training, so you can prepare, get your massage or get your strappings, and then after training you're getting your food and doing your recovery. So it's extremely demanding, because if you don't put in the work, you won't make it, or you won't play at the high, or be able to perform at the highest level. So it was a huge part, but lucky enough, as you said, very lucky that the club is doing so well, and when I started playing adult level, we were junior hurling football, and now we're senior hurling football, which is great. So, and it definitely has helped that the club is so competitive when you leave into county, because if you were playing at county for so long and then you went back to your club and they weren't as committed, or they weren't, as you said, I think club now is probably into county 10 years ago, regards preparation and the way you have to approach it. So I think if you went back to a club that wasn't progressive or weren't enthusiastic or didn't have the players, it would be a lot more difficult. And so you see fellas move away and stuff and go travelling, and like I haven't done that at all since I finished into county, because we were lucky enough that we were so competitive. Like,
so coming in then, like, you were maybe, you'd be a small bit worried, like, you know, will I have the same commitment? Will it be the same, you know, intensity from everyone? Like, but would it have been kind of a mission for you then? Like, you know, and I'm going to set the example here. This is going to be like we're going to train like a county team. Like.
Yeah, as I said, like, I thought I had more to offer to intercounty. So when I did get the call that I wasn't needed, I kind of said to myself, right, I'm going to prove you wrong. Kind of, that was my attitude. Like, I'm going to tear the back off this now, and I'm going to work as hard as I can and prove you wrong. And that year, no, I went hard at it, just every night training and putting in the work. And thankfully that year we won the county at the end of the year. And it was probably the best year I ever played with Kentork, but it was all down to motivation, just to say that, right, I'm going to be trying to be the best I can and put myself in a position where that I'll be the most dominant player. And you know, thankfully, as I've said, we've good players in our group, and that every fella kind of, once you drive the standards in training, fellas will eventually kind of try and come with you. Then, like, you know, and even by the end of the year, fellas will come to training 40 minutes before training, preparing, and that never used to happen before. But as fellas do it, and you kind of pull fellas with you, you know, eventually it kind of all fell into place.
They were happy enough to drive it on with you.
Definitely, in fairness, yeah.
Definitely. You say you felt you had more to offer. Do you mean that as a hurler, or as a footballer, or as both, or what would you?
As a hurler, I was with the hurlers that time, and I suppose, like, I get a lot of stick, or a lot of people saying to me that, oh, I should have stayed with the footballers, or, you know, between the chopping and the changing, I suppose. Like, looking back at it, at the time it felt like the right decision between the chopping changing, but it's when you're from Cork, and it's kind of like, it's grand for people from counties that are predominantly football or predominantly hurling to say that, oh, you should have stayed at one or whatever. But when you're from Cork and you're so competitive, and you're probably one of the top two counties in Ireland, like, it's it was just hard at the time, and certain circumstances fell into place where it influenced my decision and what I picked. But like, I would finish up the hurling, because like that John Moyler rang me after they lost to Limerick in Craw Park, and he really put it out on the table that he wanted to be part of the squad. And so I had a really, really enjoyed that year, that 2019, and unfortunately he left in at the end of that year, like, so a new management came in. But yeah, unfortunately just injuries and stuff started to catch up, maybe my body started to feel the effects. I felt like, looking back, I probably did way too much when I was young, And I was 19, 20, and then when I got to my late 20s, it all caught up with me. Kind of, I was trying to push myself as hard as I could, but then I'd break down or something, and it set me back, and them things kind of caught up with me then.
So you're playing with 19 teams when you were 18 years of age. So
yeah,
you had a lot going on, and you mentioned that the injuries, they maybe caught up with you a small bit when you came towards the finish. How have they held up with the club?
Yeah, I suppose as you get older now, I'm 33, and you really have to put a focus on recovery. Even there now, a few weeks ago, I bought my own ice bath for the back my back garden. So every morning I go try and go for an ice bath, and all these small things. I know they're only small percentages, but when you get to my age, any little thing will help. Thankfully, I've been very lucky. I did get my shoulder done now in February, right? So I'm only coming back from that. So fingers crossed, try to stay healthy for the rest of the year.
Right, the ice bath in the back garden is a good one, Lee. And I was reading yesterday that wasn't the only thing you did. You were fond of the udder mint, the spray on the legs. Yes, and I know that one from our own dressing room. You walk in the dressing room door and the smell, I feel like, I'm a farmer at home, so I feel like I'm walking into the milking parlour and there's some lads rubbing it on their hamstrings. But
good stuff.
Do you still use that stuff?
Yeah, I still use it. Everything I can get in oil.
And you swear by it, it works?
Well, it's like when the wind hits your legs, then your legs heat up. Uh-huh. So it's kind of more for winter time, kind of just keep your legs warm. There's definitely a theory behind it, which is probably all in the head after. once you use it, you're probably thinking I have that in my legs, and the legs will go a bit faster today.
Is there any other kind of things like that that you got into, or because it's they're always interesting stuff like that,
hot yoga and stuff people are talking about now.
The small things that lads do to kind of makes a difference to them, but can make the difference physically as well as mentally.
No, absolutely. There's players sleeping now with blindfolds on and
Connor
stuff.
Myler.
Connor Myler. And they keep the window open. Apparently a cool room is optimum.
There won't be too many other things. It'll just be kind of superstition. My socks and my boots, make sure they're fresh and tight, and do all these kind of, just to make sure that you're putting yourself in the best position, and feel comfortable on the pitch, So it's the only small things, really.
Right, you'd have been quite superstitious, would you, when you were playing?
Not really.
Okay.
No, just
the odor mint.
Yeah.
Just ice baths every morning. Would you do that first thing?
I have been to good it. Yeah. I try just it's just trying to get a routine. I find it good, and then just dip the head under, then and then out and go at it in for the day.
Right.
So it's. Yeah, I suppose I'd be always kind of watching on social media there, just things people be doing, and the ice baths seem to be big craving at the moment. So I got one in Lumi tubs. So it's it's great. It's tough going, right? It's hard to motivate yourself to get into it. But when you're in it and you're out of it, you're delighted with yourself.
Do you have to fill it up with ice, or is it one of the ones that works itself, gets the temperature?
I put bags of ice into it.
Okay. So you're keeping super value
the supermarket. I'm investing on a nice machine. It's getting
you fill it with water mint and then you get two things. I'm glad you mentioned social media there. It was an easy segue for me because I did some digging, Aidan.
All right.
And I found you on Twitter. Now, you haven't tweeted in a long time. 2017 was your last tweet. Do you remember what it was?
I don't even have Twitter app on my phone. I don't use it at all.
So you don't remember what the tweet was?
No.
So you tweeted in 2017 to the kid who stole the number 17 jersey.
Oh, yeah.
you can keep the jersey, but could you give it back because there's a GPS in it that I need?
Yes, we all had to do that. We all had to send that tweet out, actually, that time that the football was.
No way.
Yeah, because the GPS was inside the back of the jersey. So, and the GPS units are expensive.
Oh, yeah. Did you get it back?
I don't know, actually. It wasn't my jersey.
Your jersey. No, you were getting some stick underneath it. People were like, it's a GPS. Surely you can track it.
I know. Yeah. That's, people obviously don't understand. I got some stick for that, but sure, we had to do it because management taught us that. But it wasn't my jersey. It was one of the subs. I don't tweet at all.
No, that put an end to it, to be fair.
Yeah, I'm not good at this stuff, so I'll sort of leave it at that.
You're not using social media too much, or just Twitter?
Not really. Very rare, even my Instagram there. I said it was a year since I put up a picture on Instagram. I'm not really into it, to be honest. You're only going to get scrutinized for whatever you put up in some person, so just better off staying away from
it,
really.
It wouldn't have been a thing, really, back when you were playing as much. Well, you weren't playing that long ago. I'm not saying you're that long out of the game, but it's more so now is that you know, after a game, does everyone's nearly tweeting something or giving out about a player.
They're putting up pictures of their whoops. Do you ever see that? Like, their the stats.
That's one too. I was thinking about as well, the old whoop.
Yeah.
I might leave that one off. It.
Yeah, would that have played any part in it, do you know, just to get away from kind of comments on Twitter or stuff like that?
Yeah,
just?
Yeah, I don't like negativity, that negative stuff for no reason. Like, you know, so, yeah, that'd be the one big reason why I just kind of stayed away from it, because you're only kind of drawing attention to yourself, and I mean, wouldn't have any interest in it. Like.
Yeah, yeah. Don't have to see lads like us posting the whole time as well, Lee, I suppose.
No, exactly. And well, people like want to see my holidays, say thank you very much. Have a huge followership.
Yeah. Aidan, like, it's an incredible career that you had, and a really unique career, I suppose, as well. And I suppose you first burst onto the kind of national stage, I'd say, in 2009 when you won the All-Ireland 21 against Down. And then followed up the following year, you were brought into the, or maybe it was that year, brought that into the senior panel by Conor Coonan. So just an unbelievable start back then.
Very lucky. Like, even that time, I suppose it's all about timing, really. Like that time we won Cork won the All-Ireland, they got to the All-Ireland final in 2005-21, All-Ireland won it in 2007. We won it in 2009, so there was players coming through, like, and at the same time the seniors were hovering around the last four. They got to the final in 2007, the senior final in 2009. So there was a group coming through, like, so it was just all about timing, like, and thankfully it just came along at the right time. And after winning the All-Ireland in 2009, there were four of us got called into the senior panel, and they were after winning Division 2 league that time. So we came in that time. It was at a different stage. The football was earlier in the year and stuff. And so we went into the panel, and thankfully that time there was 30 on the squad for match days that time. So I was lucky enough that I actually was making this match day squad. But I came on the Munster final, right, against Limerick that year. That was my only time I played in 2009. But Conor, the one thing, like, I'd have utmost respect for Conor Coonan. Like, he's a brilliant manager, like, and he kind of understood he understood what kind of person you were and what kind of player you were. So basically 0-9 was to 0-9 was to break you in, and he'd be big about watch know what's going on, watch what the fellas are doing, and watch how fellas are training, how they prepare and stuff. And I suppose in 0-9, after we won the football, I got called into the 21 hurlers, and we Tipperary beat us actually in the Munster semi-final in Thurles. But after that, then I actually got calling to train with the senior hurlers, so I was training with the footballers and the hurlers. But I think that's why I probably was brought in the Munster final, to show that we're committed to, like, we want you here. So that once I came on the Munster final that time, I said, right, I'm not going to train with the hurlers anymore. So I focused totally on football then, and 2010 was amazing then, like, you know. But that 0-9 year really set me up for 10, because I was made sure. Like, I had the mentality of, oh, I'm from Cantork, we're a junior club, so I'm not from the city or not with one of these bigger clubs that have a reputation. So I kind of had to say to myself, if I'm gonna make it here, then I'll have to put more work in than most fellas. Like, so I always made sure that I was in the top three or four in the running, or I was always trying to be, you know, put myself up in the top bracket to have a chance of making it, you know.
Doesn't it show how clever, I suppose, and how good a manager Conor Coonan was, that he didn't just bring in and maybe leave you in the silence? He gave you that bit of experience that day in the Munster final, and you know, and he was a man you had great time for.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Jeez, I couldn't say a bad word, but man, he was just brilliant. And I think the effects of we didn't realize how good he was until he left, because since he's left, I think Cork have only won a Division 2 league, is it, or Division 3 league? That's the only thing Kirk won since. But he was brilliant, like, and one good thing, I suppose, with all good managers, they all know what their weaknesses are, and they're willing to get people in that are the best in that situation. So he knew what he wasn't strong at, he got people in positions. Okay. So some managers they try and do it all themselves, kind of thing. And he got great people around us, and that backroom team, and even everyone, it was just a brilliant year.
So he was a tremendous man manager as well, and had a great team around him. And I suppose you know what that makes.
I was just thinking there even last week about certain things that happened while he was manager. Like when I was going to DCU, I have to come down on Tuesday to train in CIT, so I get the train at 2. And Conor would pick me up at the train station in Cork, in the city, and take me to train. And I'd have to eat my food and my lap in the car back to the train station. So I'd be back in Dublin for 12 o'clock that night. But he was the fella that clicked, you know, that them kind of things. Yeah. Like,
small things make a huge difference for players. I didn't think a Cork lad would come all the way up to Dublin for college. They say Cork is the capital down there. But.
I ended up coming up right. But it was only up here for a year, so it was grand. It was back down again.
Back down to the real capital.
Civilization.
Yeah, geez, it was mad, wasn't it? The amount of teams when you hear him talking about under 21, hurling, football. Yeah. The whole shebang going on.
School and everything too, yeah.
DCU,
and
like.
And you think that a lot of people think you play as much football as you can in your like adolescent years and in your development and the benefits of that and as much sport as possible, which you obviously did. But you do think that miles on the clock, it caught up with you a little bit and led to injuries?
I just kind of noticed that. Like when I was younger, I never really used to get a few hamstring problems, but nothing major. But just like towards the end there when I was 29, just like just weird things were going to happen. Like I remember just running, my quad just kind of went and like all these kind of stuff that never really happened. And my back, I used to get fierce problems, back spasms. And it might not have anything to do with it, but I won't be surprised if it had something to do with all the game, all the teams and stuff I was with when I was younger. You know, and
when you are rushing and racing, and as you said, the hour trek in from Clanturk, and you're sitting in traffic, and all that can, you know, it definitely can catch up on you when you're, because you know, if you're training every night, it's tough.
And like at the end of the day, every manager worries about his own setup. Like he doesn't. Every manager will just try and get the most out of his setup. So he'll if you're training Tuesday with one team and then Wednesday night you're another team, he's only gonna, he doesn't care what happened the night before, even though they are getting better at that. Like, and I suppose you kind of have to go through it or experience it to be able to be wise enough to say it too, you know, to say that, right, I'm actually too tired here, like I can't train tonight. And
it's a tough thing to do, isn't it?
It is. And you have to be selfish, like even there with the brother Tommy, like I've been definitely trying to influence him regards how your decision making regards, because he's similar regards, he's a good footballer, he's in with the senior footballers, but he's a good hurler as well. Like he played underage hurling all his up, but I made sure to tell him, like, make sure you pick one now and just focus on that and don't do what I did, because like it was all lovely, like to be able to be to call yourself a dual player and to play hurling and football with Cork, but like I don't know if I had my time again, but I've stayed at the footballers that time maybe. I don't know. It's just trying to influence, say the younger generation and tell them don't kind of make the same, I wouldn't say mistakes, but choices. Like, yeah, I don't know.
2014, that was the last year you did the dual, wasn't
one,
it?
I did it one year. I was midfield on both teams, and it just by the end of it, I was absolutely spent. I was
mentally and physically.
The Tipperary game, the All-Ireland semi-final, like I was playing midfield, but was it the week before we played Mayo in the football in Croke Park as well? Or was it a week or two? My body just started shutting down. Like I was
in the middle of the match, you could probably feel it coming up to that Tipperary match.
You're just trying your best, like, to push as hard as you could, but just no matter how much nutrition and stuff, by the end of that year, like, it just got caught up.
And the motivation too, it must have been so difficult, because like you train all week, it's like a slow burner, you're building towards this big game for a performance, because you've got game after game after game, it nearly all blends into one, and you can't treat anything more special.
And the one thing I didn't realise when I was making the decision to do it, like, is that you're actually creating a bit of friction within the group, because you have fellas that are training 100% and you're coming in doing 50% and you're starting, they're not. You know, fellas getting sour and stuff. And that was happening too, which is understandable. If I was in their position, I'd be sour as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that was something I didn't realise until afterwards when I look back at it. You know, and it was all like, it's all nice to be able to call yourself that you did it. Like, but I don't know, was it like, I got the Munster Hurley medal that year, right, which is great. And we lost to Kerry in the Munster final. But yeah, it was extremely difficult, though, to be fair.
I know, like, it's, I know what you mean, that it's like, it's great to call yourself a dual player. Like you mentioned, even the Munster finals, one of them was on one Sunday and the other one was the next Sunday. This, so just
mental. Yeah, I remember the Thursday before the football was first. And I was like driving the car to train. I was like thinking to myself, this is going to be fairly tough. This is going to be down to the wire stuff, like regards trying to get through it. Because like to be number nine in both teams was just going to be so hard. Like, and you're playing against some of the best midfielders in the country as well.
As Lee mentioned, the kind of, whether it's the motivation or even just the focus on a game. Like, you're going from a Sunday, you're mad focused on Kerry, and then the next day, you're thinking about a Munster final that's coming up. Just what, 6 days away? Like, it's,
yeah, I know they're so hard to get to. Like, you know, and that time you just. So you don't realise how lucky you are to be in that position, to be playing once the finals. Like, they're so difficult to get into, and they're so difficult to win. And I was just kind of floating away at the time. I'd say, just trying to just not really get too bogged down, but just take every whatever came next. Just do it. Not think about it too much, just get on with it. Kind of thing.
Your thought process was interesting there, because like a Munster final, it's, you know, the pinnacle of the provincial game, you should be excited more than anything, but you're thinking, I have two of these to get through. Do you know what I mean? Even that alone, it just tells you everything you need to know about how difficult it is to manage.
Bittersweet, I'd say, is probably how you look back at it, kind of like, you know.
It was brilliant. It's unbelievable that I got the Hurling Munster medal. Like, that's something that's very hard to get as well. But, it was bittersweet, because like, I remember coming off the pitch against Tipperary in the Ireland semi-final. I was just like, what was it all for? Like, so it ended up getting knocked out against Tip and losing to Mayo, and then you're just getting scrutinised. Like, you're getting known. So when you lose, like, you're only as good as your last game. So it's bittersweet.
There's a spotlight on you as well when everyone's like, looking at you early on, is this lad fresh? Do you know, is he tired coming back from the football? One thing that I found just very striking for me was that you mentioned in an interview before that coming off in that Tipperary, that All-Ireland semi-final, you were well beaten by Tip that day, that you just said sorry to Jimmy Barry Murphy.
Because he's not a brilliant manager, like, we've got through all for the men, but he had so much faith in me, like, and he always was so sound, like, and he took a risk by starting me, like, and because we played Mayo the week before, like, so the preparation wasn't as good, and so that's all I could say to him, like, because the game was gone. In fairness, Tipperary played extremely well that day, and I think they put on a clinic. The keeper that time was, who was in goal that time, was it?
It
the
guy was Darren Gleeson.
Destroyed us to sharp puckouts.
He's brilliant. He's a golfer. You'd know by him.
It was impressive. Like, to be fair, very good, but. That's all I could really say to him, because he put so much faith into me, and I just didn't reward him with the opportunity he gave me. Like,
you can see why Jimmy Barry would have done that, because he would probably have seen a bit of himself in yourself, that he did that for years himself.
Maybe. But like, I even remember when the phone rang, like, and he was like, "Hi, Ed, and this is Jimmy Barry Murphy." I was just like, he has that aura about him, and when he talks, you listen. And she couldn't say no to him, like, you know, whatever you wanted me to do. I was like, yeah, I'll do it, no matter. But you know, he's just such a nice man, like, and he's such a legend too, like. So yeah, it was just disappointing not to perform to my abilities on the day for him. You know?
Yeah, he was probably one of your heroes growing up. Like, and just to go in there to get the call into the Cork panel at that stage, and. You know, I'd say he's the type of lad that you'd love to do, you'd do anything for, I'd say.
Yeah, and he's a gas man, like, he's a pure character, like, and he doesn't say much, but when he does say something, like, you know, it's good, like, you know.
You enjoyed the time.
That's enough said when you fellas like Ricky and talking about you, like, so.
Yeah.
That's enough said about him, then. There's only need any more words said after that.
You enjoyed the time playing under him. Was he similar to Conor Coonan in manager, or different style, or?
Similar enough, he was similar, like that. Just had an aura, you know. I knew he was the boss. Like, he was the boss, and he knew he was the boss. And same with Connor. And you know, there was he was a character, like, but he was the men.
He kind of knew when to be serious and knew when to joke around a small bit.
That's it. You knew, you could have a laugh at him too, like, but he knew to win and when not to cross the line or to.
I get you. One of the interesting things Aidan said was at the start of the show was that Kanturk are a dual club and 80% of their training, Lee, is hurling and 20% football. So it just proves the point that I've been making here for a while is that football, you just need to be fit.
I knew when he was coming in, you're going to gang up on me with the football thing. Every time a hurling person comes on, he just puts me on the spot. Maybe Cork football, you have to just be fit in Tyrone. It's a whole different thing.
Would you found that throughout your career, Aidan, that like hurling was the thing you had to practice to be sharp at more, or your focus on being sharp at hurling more?
Yeah, definitely. If you don't put the time into the hurling, it's gone so fast now. Like it's, you just need to be at it nearly every day. Like you need to have the hurling in your hand at least 20 minutes every day. Like we do the 70-30, like, but we kind of, the reason we have to do this because we've such an overlap with the same group of players playing both. And like I'd say we have 9 league games, 9 hurling and 9 football. So we've 18 league games and they're trying to, train in the middle of that and play games every weekend, so with the same group of players. So it's just a case of we just have to, if you don't put the work in hurling, you'll be caught, you'll be found out. And in the club championship in Cork is very competitive. They split it there a few years ago to senior and senior A, so it was just senior. So you kind of, at the start of the year, you kind of said, right, there's a few teams here that were at the same level. So there would be a good chance that we could get quarterfinal or whatever, from there. But now that we're gone, we won that grade, senior A, we're going to be senior premier now, like that grade of senior. So it's like dog eat dog, like it's all the same level of players or same level of quality regards the teams up there. So it's extremely competitive. And we just know ourselves, this is our second year up there now. And we just know if we don't put in the work that we're going to not have a hope.
Yeah, you obviously remind me a bit of Loughmore, Castellani and Tipperary in that at the top of the boat, listen to Noel and John McGrath, they talked about sometimes it'd be like to start off with the footballs and move into the hurling. Would you do something similar?
Yeah, we are doing that now a bit, right, because as players we kind of requested it as well. Like I suppose we've been on the road now a good few years, this group, like, so we're kind of coming, like a lot of us are kind of coming to the later stages now, so we kind of set ourselves that we need to be doing the work, like, so we could try and get the footballs out as much as we can. But you don't want to flog it either, like, because you don't want to be up at the field like for 2 hours on a night either, like, so
it's just easily done when you're mixing the two. You could go from one game to another and done. You could be waiting there all night. Like.
That's it. Yeah. So we don't want to be flogging fellas either, like, because we've a lot of fellas working in the city that come down for training during the week. Like, so if you don't want to be keeping them around for too long either. Like, so.
Yeah.
Do you find that we talked about the struggles with dual, being a dual player county level, because there's no cohesion, but at your club there is because of the overlap of players. Do you find then that mentally you always get a break from one? Like, you're never sick of hurling because football is just around the corner. Yeah. You're never sick of football because hurling,
voices,
you know?
Yeah, no, it's like, as I said, this has always been the situation. Kendrick, so we're just used to know at this stage. When I started out, it was just always dual. I couldn't really tell you what we are as a club. Like, every football club or hurling club is just dual club, really, because we kind of always just kind of play whatever's coming up next. Like, so I think that just the biggest thing with it is communication between the two setups. Like, and we're lucky if my father is the manager of the hurling, so, and he's good friends with the manager of the football. So, generally, you need that to have any chance of having success, is to have cohesion between the two groups and the two managements, because you don't, the worst thing could happen is friction and fighting of who's trying this night. And in fairness to the football management, they're very understandable regards the whole 70-30 thing, like, and they understand that a lot of work needs to be done in the hurling.
It attests the friendships at times, I'd say, between the management.
Some evenings there, especially if you have a bad result. Say if we get a bad result from the football, no, they'd be giving out that we're not doing football. You know, kind of, so
yeah.
It, once you're winning, it's not too bad, but kind of keeps the glass over it. So it's yeah, we'll see. We'll play, as I said, we just go game by game.
See how long the friendship lasts.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so we're just going to take a short break here as we have a new segment, which we'll be looking at this week and for the rest of the championship in partnership with our friends at Sure, official statistic partners of the GAA, where we look at the most eye-catching stats from a stunning championship weekend. There were plenty of eye-catching stats this weekend, but one that stood out in particular leads to quite a difficult quiz question, which I'm sure some of our listeners, they'll be sharp enough that they'll be able to get it. So the question is, which player has scored the most points from play in a single game in the Football Championship, All-Ireland or Provincial, so far this year? So now it's up to you, our audience. Give us the answer to this stat-related question on our social media to begin with a chance of winning some Sure themed prizes. Winners will be announced on the show next week. We'll get back into the football, lads. Aidan, a tough result, I suppose, for Cork to take, especially after the penalty. I know John Cleary was vexed afterwards, and I definitely wouldn't blame him, because it was... I know you don't listen. We know that the new rule is there, and that's that if it's a goal scoring opportunity, it's a cynical play that you know, this is a penalty. John Cleary was arguing, he said how it was a penalty is beyond me. I just saw Sean Powter and Paul Geaney coming together, and to be honest, that's the exact same that I saw, that Powter, he was running across, and I wouldn't call it cynical. I thought he was just going across, made a bit of contact with Geaney, and I'd say Geaney was clever. He kind of fell into Powter.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't call it cynical. Maybe it was a goal scoring opportunity, but...
Yeah, I kind of saw a picture of the Powter tackle him, and I think Brian O'Driscoll and somebody else were back as well. But I know probably if he got beyond Sean Powter, Paul Geaney, he would have had the opportunity to fist it across the goals. I think there's somebody coming through.
Yeah, Paulie Clifford was.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't a gilt-edged opportunity. It wasn't a brilliant opportunity. Yeah.
Like, I think it's a situation where if it wasn't a penalty, I don't think Kerry people would have given out that they would have got 13-yard free and Poulter still would have got black card. But that it just creates a lot of controversy when it was a penalty. And yeah, it's a hard one to call. Like, I just thought Paul Kane, he was very smart and he used his experience to be able to put himself in a position to get fouled, you know, because he knew Powter was coming at such a pace, and especially after Powter gave away the ball in the middle of the pitch, he was trying to undo his mistake, so he was over eager probably, and yeah, it was extremely disappointing, because it looked like Cork were coming, like, and they were only down a point at the time, and you could really hear the Cork crowd trying to drive the team forward, like, because in fairness, I'm absolutely delighted that John Cleary is there. Like, he was our manager in 09, and brilliant, brilliant manager. And I thought he should have been there years ago. I thought he should have been there when Connor left. But I'm delighted that he's there now, and he's after putting a very good backroom team together as well. So you can see they're coming. I know they have to have a few disappointments this year regards Clare, but you can see there's potential there. And I just hope that. This result the last day, even though it was a good performance, and they kind of got, they got kind of applauded.
Moral victory.
We don't really want, like, we're sick of the moral victories now against Kerry. Like, it's either beaten or don't. You know, that's the situation. And we kind of hope that the next day, now they can continue the good form. Like, you could see what they're trying to do. I thought their tackling was extremely good. They dispossessed the ball a lot. But the penalty was just a turning point, and when you have players like David Clifford and the lads around them, Sean O'Shea and Paulie, and, you know, they have you think you're on top of them, you think you're coming, and then bang, you know,
to get one chance, Like, it's been Cork the last few years, as Aidan mentioned, they've only won one league since that in 2010, and they've been inconsistent. But I would say that even though there has been a few kind of speed bumps this year, losing to Clare and Munster, they had some mixed the bad with the good in the league. They were very good against Dublin. Another moral victory maybe that day as well. But it does look like they're, like, going back to the win against Louth, they were good against Kerry. you'll give them a chance now, and they're obviously they'll have a chance against Mayo, but like they're improving under John Cleary.
Yeah, and it's so important that they do, because Munster football really needs them. Kerry need them as well. I know Kerry people always say that, they're very honest about that. Last year when Cork played them, they sort of had a moral victory again. They kept within range, like 55th minute, something like that. Fitness. And then, yeah, fitness and things, you know, let them down. And I don't know, that they tried to contain and stay in the game, and that seemed to be the goal. But I thought on Sunday, or was it Saturday, they went for it a bit more. You know, they threw on Stephen Sherlock late. You know, they were trying to throw the kitchen sink at Kerry, and they were just being a bit braver. And it's like, let's forget about the moral and sticking it in and actually go for a win here. But I do want to ask you, Aidan, about the Stephen Sherlock situation, because that's your top scorer, and they're keeping him on the bench. And I know we're going to talk maybe a little bit later about Monaghan and how against Derry they dropped Conor McManus, they dropped Jack McCarron, two very talented footballers, forwards, for basically they wanted more athleticism to deal with Derry. Cork have dropped Stephen Sherlock, a real flair, beautiful footballer, maybe not the biggest, strongest, hardest working in the world, but he brings something else, obviously. Is this just the evolution of football? Is there no room for that forward anymore? Or what is
it? Like, Nicky replaced Chris Sog Jones, which is kind of a similar build to him. And there must be something going behind the scenes that he's not starting, because I know I'm who John Cleary is. He's going to put his best team out, and the fellas are performing the best at training. Like, so, Stephen has great. He's a great talent. Like, and he can out of nothing, he can create something. He's a fierce boot with the ball as well. Like, he can get points from long range. So. Maybe it's the whole thing of a lot of games are won now in the last 15-20 minutes. Like, maybe you want to get fresh legs in the forwards, and it looks good that Stevens coming on with 10-15 minutes ago, he'd be a boost like for the team coming on, because like, he has the potential, and maybe that's the strategy that they're working on. And maybe, as you said about Manon and with McCarron and Conor McManus coming on, maybe that's the situation they're trying to create. Just a boost when fellas are feeling fatigued and stuff, you bring on some serious quality, and it can have an effect on the group then to push them through.
Is that not still, like, if you're not starting with your best team, then you're at risk of, you know, suffering a lead early on, and then you have to catch up? But then if you start with your best team, then you don't have anything come from the bench. Is it not just a lack of depth, really, then? Because, like, Mayo, a very strong forward line, but they'll have Tommy Conroy coming on. Mm. But their forward line, you know, it's nearly just as good coming on, coming off.
Yeah, I know. It's a risky one. Like, it's a strange situation to figure out what the best solution is. But, if Sherlock got the goal that time when he ran through, they would have said, "Jesus, that was a great call."
True,
because he brought fierce pace, and he creates something different. Even that, I think that if you have a corner forward or someone in forwards that can create that situation where you come out towards the ball but you cut and you go create space in behind you, it's nearly impossible to defend it, because defender has to stay behind him and he can get the ball in front. But if you're trying to be touch tight, you create space behind you, and he's good at that. Like, and that situation was it Ian McGuire gave him the ball, I think, like, they're clubmen, so they understand each other, like, so them kind of situations helped in. And it is a difficult one. As I said, if you got the goal that time, it probably would have been a great call.
Do you think it's changed a lot since you were playing definitely Gaelic football, and nowadays there's not only talk really about how much, you know, is it tough to watch? Is it some people call it intriguing, other people call it boring. Maybe there's a fine line between the two. I'd say the main thing in what you were talking about there with the Stephen Sherlock thing, it's as if Derry have kind of transformed all that with their cornerbacks just completely. Mm-hmm. They're nearly their main attackers. But it was interesting at the weekend. Davy Burke was interviewed after the Roscommon beat Sligo, and he was saying, you know, he was asked about when they kept the ball. I'm sure you've seen that last week. They kept the ball for 6 minutes before a score against Dublin. And he was kind of saying that, you know, it was people are giving out about this. You know, it's just lazy analysis.
Yeah.
And that, you know, this is the way the game is. And he was saying as well, like, when he's on the line, he doesn't mind looking at this, because this is, you know, he's so invested in it, and he doesn't care if it's boring. And I know some people watching football, they'll be able to be so focused that they won't mind how boring it is. But At the same time, David Burke also said that he was went to the Kildare and Dublin match, and he's a Kildare man, and he said he thought that was a little bit boring because maybe he wasn't as invested in it,
yeah.
even though that was such an entertaining game. Well, so, do you know, is it was entertaining for the first, and I thought it was more end-to-end.
Yeah.
But do you think it's definitely changed a lot from when you were playing? Do you find it hard to watch a football match now, or are you able to get intrigued in it like your Davy Burke?
I think as you said, you kind of have to look at the game in a different way. Now, like, you have to look at the way that they're setting up their strategies regards how the team is moving the ball from side to side and how they're able to create the runner coming through. So it's I think if you kind of you can't look at it as a free flowing kicking game no anymore, but if you kind of change your mindset and this is how the game is and look at different scenarios and situations, and it is enjoyable, like, because they're unbelievable athletes. Like the conditioning on players now is something else, and the quality of players. Like, I think Dublin, after bringing what Dublin achieved there a few years ago, after the amount of teams now that it's very hard to call, like, who's there's probably 3 or 4 teams you think could win the All-Ireland this year, which is great, like, because it's making it so competitive. But I do find it very enjoyable, because it's just you kind of, as I said, you just change your mindset and you kind of look at it for what it is.
So you're not one of them hurling snobs who won't be able to watch a game of football after watching a game of hurling of a Sunday.
No, definitely not.
You can come back on the show, Aidan. That's what I'd like to hear.
It's like the up in the north as well, like the games, like, just it's unbelievable to watch, like, the intensity and the passion with that comes out, like, it's just unreal. Even that Ulster final, sure, Jesus, games of the year so far.
Yeah.
Which was brilliant. So I find it very enjoyable to watch now, to be honest. There's no issue sitting on a Sunday now watching a few games.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's not the answer now.
We'll take any answer. We're open to all opinions here. Do you enjoy it? Would you be a fanatic? Would you watch games the whole time? Or
I would, yeah. Yeah, especially, you know, with the brother involved too. Like, so it's another aspect to why you want to follow it, like, and see who other teams are getting on, and say even watching the Mayo low game, because Cork play Mayo now next. And even though I played the game football, and I don't know when was the last football game I played into county, but I still try and help out with the brother and give him advice and try to help him out and make sure he's prepared the best way possible. And if we can get some bit of analysis on if he plays cornerback, so if he's marking corner forward, just maybe watch that corner forward for the next day, who he's going to might be marking next day, and give him some bit of encouragement or advice on it. So
you throw him in the ice baths maybe the odd time as well.
Yeah, he's a bit too timid for the ice baths.
Okay, he's just on the other mint at the moment,
chasing him out the door. Water.
Yeah, just one more thing on Cork was, it was actually Lee that you brought this up for me this morning, that it was. Maybe you'd heard it as a throwaway comment that since 2010, the Cork and Down were the slower teams, that football kind of changed with Donegal maybe in 2011. Cork and Down were two of the slower teams to kind of
adapt, sort of. Well, that is thrown at them. It's because I think, the Noddies were dominated by Tyrone and Kerry in that order. And then 2010, you know, Down and Cork, they were building something really special. Yeah. They made that All-Ireland final. And then they were in the final in the under-20s as well. You know, like, two strong teams coming through. It's going to be their era, and it ended up being the Dublin era, really.
Yeah.
And not only that, they went from not dominating to not even competing in certain stages. The both teams went right down to Division 3 at different stages. And it was been thrown at them that they were two teams that sort of failed to adapt to the new sort of what Jim McGuinness brought in and dealing with, like, the blanket defence. Not so much you have to be the blanket defence, but how to cope with it at the very least. Mm. Do you think, is there any truth in that at all?
Yeah, I think, like, as I said earlier, that it's all about timing, like, and I think, like, fair enough, the Kerry and Dublin, or Kerry and Tyrone were the dominant teams in the noughties, but if you watch Cork, were always there in the last four, say, or they got to the final in, was it... 7 but
they were so tight with Kerry all along. It 7? I remember that.
Like, you had a group of players that were there from, let's say, 2004 all the way to 12, and 13 was kind of, that's when the huge transition happened after 13. So Coonan left, I think Brent Corporal came in, but he dropped, I think, 8 or 9 players, senior players that were there for a good lot of years, and they'd played a lot of high in games. So there's a huge, say Dublin came in 11 And we tried to get up to the level in 12 that Donegal beat us in the Honour semi-final, which was, we'd won the league, Division 1 league, we'd won the Munster, and Donegal caught us in the semi-final, but then they were hopping that year, to fair, like they were flying fit. Jesus, I remember being on the pitch during the game at 10-15 minutes to go, and they were just up and down, it was relentless. And then we tried to get back up there again in 13, but it just, this was a lot of us had, a lot of the older fellas were coming towards the end, and there was just a huge fall off then. And I suppose we last, say in 10, myself and Kieran, we were the young fellas on the team. And by 14, Kieran was gone to Australia and I was gone with the hurlers. So there was a lot of, and then we lost all the older fellas, you know, Kenties, the Nicholas Murphys, the Misklas, the Paddy Sands, the, what's their, Paddy Kelly, and all these, they were brilliant players like for us, but they're all coming towards the end. So it was just all about timing. If for another stage, maybe Cork could have been more successful in the 90s, but there was such quality with Kerry and Tyrone that time that that didn't happen. So Dublin, it was Dublin 11, 12, Donegal in Dublin again for how many years after that, and Kerry were there as well. We were just in the middle of transition and trying to get players in, and I suppose a lot just didn't really happen for Cork, and they're still trying to find their way. We're still trying to figure out, but they've been unlucky too. Like, in, was it 14? Cork were winning by a point against Kerry in the Munster final, and Jimmer Fionn Fitzgerald kicked that point from 45 yards, and Kerry went on to win the Ireland after that.
Cork
should have beaten them that day, down in Clarny. So small things, like if Cork won that day, you wouldn't have known. Like, I'm not saying Cork could have won the Ireland, but I'm saying Kerry went on to win the Ireland after that.
So do you think it was maybe a mixture of time and lads leaving and
a bit of luck, and you need a load of things. Like, you need, and so even the Dublin teams, the great Dublin teams, like, they had luck too. Like, there was a lot of games there I kind of look back and you just, things happen, like, and it just sways one way or the other way, like, and that's just, you need everything to go your way to be able to be successful.
Is there something in that style thing that you won it, and maybe it was more open in 2010, and then when Donegal changed it, that you took a while to adapt, that the win was still
such
in your mind?
It was such a drastic thing at the time, like the way they set up, like, it blew people's minds. And then even when they did it against other teams in 2011, and in 2012 you knew what they were going to do, but just knowing's not enough.
It takes a while to get used to it.
And then facing it.
Yeah, and what they were doing was unbelievable, but they couldn't maintain it. A lot of them started breaking down, didn't they, injuries-wise and stuff, because they were training so relentlessly. But and in fairness, they got their All-Ireland and they got a few Ulsters, and it paid off for them in the end. That's just the way it is now. If you don't spend the money, and if you don't put in the work, you're just not going to have any hope at all to be successful. It'll be very interesting to see why. It's hard to know. It's kind of, I suppose, it's a mixture now between running and kicking. It's the team that can do both the best, or will be thereabouts. Even the kick pass, if they can get the one bounce pass, all these small things instead of two or three bounce pass, but all these things speed up the game, and fellas are coming at such pace then off the shoulder, trying to create that get through the blanket, like, or get through whatever defensive setup they have. It's all these small things that make a huge difference.
Well, Lee, you're going to tell us that Tyrone have maybe the best mix. They looked like a team that were on fire in the early stages against Armagh, and maybe looked like they were going to beat them well, especially when Rian O'Neill got sent off. After 30 minutes, Tyrone were up by 3 points at that stage. Maybe it was 4. But Armagh got back into it. I suppose, and the Rian O'Neill thing, I don't think there was any question. I think it was a definite red card. And it's one that he gets involved. He does kind of leave the knee in at times. And
it's one of the things I really love about Rian O'Neill. I love watching him play, genuinely. And I love that he's on the edge. He doesn't let anyone push him around. He knows he's the main man. He acts like the main man, as he should. And when people get stuck into him, he's like, you're going to get something back here, you know. But when you play on that edge, and that is, you know, it's almost become cliche using that term, but that is what he does. And he oversteps the mark sometimes, and he overstepped it 100% this time. You know, some people, I think Kieran McGeaney came out and was like, Cormac was pulling him down. And it's like, he maybe pulled him down initially, fair enough, but no one's pulling a man's knee on your face. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so it was definitely a red card. And then I think it might have been a case of Tyrone. The red card kind of, like the game before against Galway, kind of spoiled the game a little bit. And even from Tyrone's point of view, of course, it's an advantage. But then it meant, well, containment might be the best option here then, because it's so important that they get a win. They haven't won a championship game since Fermanagh 2021. This is our biggest rivals. We've got a decent lead. We've got the man up. Let's keep ball. Let's, you know, not take risks that they were maybe taking in the opening 20 minutes. My concern with Tyrone is that they're maybe over-reliant on that full forward line. Darren McCurry was electric at the start, kicking 4 points in the first half. Dara Canavan was electric at the end, like unbelievable. But then Matty Donnelly was consistent all the way through the game. He got man of the match. I mean, I've been singing his praises all season. He got something like 28 possessions in the first half alone. Like, he just was in the mix for everything, so important.
Very intelligent footballer.
Yeah, so smart. But outside of that, like, Kyle Coney made the point a couple of weeks ago that the half forward line don't score enough. We always play like defenders and working half forwards rather than scorers. Now, they must have listened to the show, because they played Michael O'Neill at six, which is what he was calling for instead of starting. Of course they are. Listening to me. And then Joe Goose was moved to 11 and they played Niall Sludden, who's coming back with injuries, you know, and they're still trying to pick their best team. But I'm hopeful that there's enough football with this new format that they can play into form. Got that first win against Armagh. That's the most important thing. The only thing you can get is 2 points. They've got it. You know, going to Westmeath, they are a Division 3 team. They're playing well. But hopefully, you know, put in a performance now and then go from there. And hopefully there's something we could salvage out of this season.
Definitely, yeah. Just one thing I wanted to ask Aidan about. Lee made a good point about Rian O'Neill there, that his attitude of, you know, you're not going to push me around, and that he's, you know, he never lets anyone really push him around. And he's a physically imposing sort of player to mark. I would imagine... Had you many teammates like that who are, even did you come up against many lads that whenever, if a back came into them, gave them a little dig at the start of the game, that, you know, they're getting it right back, that, do you know, sometimes they might cross the line, but they're brilliant too. Or would you have been like that yourself?
Yeah, no, I'd bide my time. I'd find a way, instead of getting sent off or anything, I'd wait the 50-50 ball or something and just make it sure that it was fair. In training sessions, there was plenty of scuffles and fights and stuff where fellas are competing against each other, and any small advantage you get, you'll try and get it, try and find it. But like for Rian O'Neill, like, it's for a player that with such quality, he's starting to get a name for himself now. If you could imagine, no one said the Tyrone dressing room, let's get it this fella. No, he'll react if you do whatever to him. So it's not that's not a good place to be, like, our situation to be in, because he's as you said, like, he's a brilliant player. He's unbelievable talent, but if he has that in his locker, like, it's a big risk to have in a situation like you just knew when he got sent off last year, they're under pressure, you know.
Yeah,
the chances of winning are nearly very slim. So, like, it's Graham being the unbelievable talent, but if you can't control it in situations, and especially up in the north, you're definitely going to be tested with more. Or fellas will say something to you or do something to you.
What are you trying
often.
To say?
you play football hard. If you're
it's a fine line, though, isn't it? I suppose, between standing up for yourself and not getting caught. Sure,
Clifford's the same as well. Dave Clifford, like, he's getting stick every game, every game. Like, but he's well able to control it. Like, I don't has he ever got a red card?
He did against Tyrone, actually,
in the league. Yeah,
yeah. That was harsh enough. Though,
very harsh. It was out to the umpires that day.
Oh yeah, he was
camera behind the goals, and pulled him down or something.
But even against Cork there. Like, he was obviously getting verbals before he took the penalty, because once he scored, he went, I don't know who it was, but he went straight up to their face and was celebrating.
Back,
you know, it was just enough. Like, sure, you're allowed to do that, not allowed to go further.
Even last year in the league final as well, like, when you meant O'Hara was, at him, like, constant, and he just didn't.
He was laughing.
Laughing. And that's something Rian O'Neill will have to get into his game. Like, as I said, like, teams will just be in the dressing room, like, get at this fella, and he'll react. You know.
In fairness, I only found this out, he's only 24.
Yeah, he's a young chap.
That's mad. Like, you know, he's just been there, and he's co-captain and stuff. There's so much on that boy's shoulders. So, time to learn.
One thing I just wanted to ask you there, I thought it was interesting. You said that a lot of, and it only clicked in my head that a lot of the biggest rows, or the biggest rows, I suppose, between lads who are marking each other could happen in training sessions, I'd say, because lads fighting for their own spot.
Yeah, and you can't get it off either. Like, well, you can't get suspended, isn't it? So it's fellas will test the waters big time. But
Seen a lot of it,
like,
have you?
Even the club there, know, like, we'd be going at it as well, like, a few of us in training, because draw it for the younger lads watch you too, it brings bite, and it brings, like, these fellas want to be here, and these fellas want to get to bring the intensity, be ready for the games. Like, so it's it just shows fellas care, like, and yeah. you're not at the end of the day, you're not going to do anything stupid, like, but you're just going to show that I'm not going to be pushed around either. And there's loads of ways to be able to show that you're physically ready, or physically not going to be intimidated without getting Ricard, or, you know, just ways around that, like, you know. And I suppose the older you get, the wiser you get too, I suppose, you figure out different ways to set the mark.
It's what you need, though, isn't it? A training, like, evenings you come in and, you know, a training's not a match. You mightn't be in the zone, you mightn't be there fired up as you should be, I suppose, or, you know, and then some lad comes into you and gives you a bit of a belt, or, you know, goes in hard on a tackle, and you're like, right, well, that'd wake you up.
Yeah, geez, I used to love players trying to verbally or trying to do something else, because I'd be like, right, let's go, we'll see what'll happen. No, just, and I used to try and do it by trying to play better, like, and so it's how you react and how you use the situation to get the most out of it, to benefit from it. Because, like, if a fella's doing that to you, he kind of knows himself, right, I need to do something, because if I need to do something to this fella to try and get, because I know if I just try to play football or try to play hurling, then I'm going to be under pressure. So he's trying to find different areas to try and rattle you, like. So I just find that if a fella's doing that to me, I know it's a sign of weakness.
Yeah, so long as it doesn't go too far and that lads in the same team fall out is what you don't want, but you just need to...
Like, even the last club training, the two myself and one of the lads, we went at it in the training session, and it got a bit heated, and there was a few verbals and stuff, but after training, the huddle went over, shook hands, great battle, let's do it again the next night again. Yeah. And that was it, and it was perfect.
Yeah. Well, it must be awkward at your training, because they're all Walshes, aren't they? Family feuds.
Yeah, the boys are smart. They stay, I'm the oldest of the seven, like, so they don't get involved in me at all.
Yeah, we've talked a good bit about a lot of the games there, the Kildare and Dublin, sure, we've mentioned that. We'll go on to just a small bit about the Donegal and Derry. Derry just, I kind of always felt that they were on top. And I know Donegal, they're a great team to hang in a game for a long time. They can kick some unbelievable points. Kieran Thompson and Oisin Gallen at the weekend were unreal, but and kicked some brilliant points. But Derry just, and I was a little bit worried about them, do you know, that they might struggle to pick it up again as soon as Rory Gallagher left, but this was a very good performance.
No, it was a very good performance by them, but I still think a lot of credit should go to Donegal, because typically they're very good at sticking in a game and they're hard to break down and hard to beat, but they haven't been that this season in the league and in the Ulster Championship. You know, they've been very poor, so many things off the field, on the field, injuries really collapsing, but they seem to have took the break away and came back, and, you know, they've got a bit of self-pride back in the team again. That Oisin Gallen is something else. Like, he is really special. Chrissy McCaig was marking him, and I've never seen anyone score that much up. Yeah, and I know a lot of it was marks points. And freeze nine
three,
points.
Three from play, three.
Like,
three
marks. You know.
Yeah, he earned them. He earned them off Chrissy. You know?
Yeah, I mean, like, when you get space against Chrissy, you know, it's a collector's item. Like, I thought.
Paddy McBurty coming back as well.
Came off the bench. You know, even just seeing him coming off the bench must have just been a boost. And, like, they played right to the end. They got that goal at the end. Derry would be disappointed in it. But Derry were definitely, they weren't as reliant on Shane McGuigan. The scores were coming from all over the pitch. A lot of them from cornerbacks and halfbacks getting their goals and stuff. Like, it is insane.
When,
like,
you mentioned chasing after the Donegal lads back whatever year it was, 2013, Conor Doherty just sprang to mind to me, the Derry cornerback. Like, flying. An absolute flyer.
Yeah. Jesus. And that's one thing as a Conor forward, anyway. You definitely don't see your Conor back up the field, because you have to go after him. Like, and so when you have Conor backs or the defenders like that, you know, they're huge, they're great fellas to have, like,
just throw the ball out to him and he's going to run.
But there's an entertainment value in that too. Like, I do find that entertaining, seeing him breaking through and ripping the back of the net. You know, like, that's not negative football to me. You know, negative football is when everyone's behind the ball, but if everyone's going attacking the play, I mean, I find that was a really entertaining game, but it wasn't free flowing kicking.
No, it was tight.
I suppose that was the reason we mentioned Conor Doherty. That was the reason Jack McCarron and Conor McManus were dropped for the when Monaghan played them there 2 weeks ago, and it worked out for them that day. And they were clever enough to brought Jack McCarron. I'm always singing Jack McCarron's praises on this podcast because I think he's one of the most, just the best man to sell a dummy I think I've ever seen.
It's insane.
And he was back at the weekend and he kicked 8 points from play. Some of them were just, and one pass he gave, it's not coming to me who that pass was to, but across the
cross
field.
Some
of the points he kicked. Look, Monaghan, they beat Clare, Carl O'Connell played well as well. He's like a fine wine. Conor McCarthy was brilliant. His switch to wing back has been a revelation this year. But Jack McCarron is—he was the difference here at the weekend, and what a player it.
Yeah, geez, I was lucky enough at the time when I was in DCU, he was there as well. And these fellas that just make things look easy, like they're a pleasure to watch. And he's both legs. You wouldn't think.
No.
You wouldn't say which is weaker. Like they just seem both, just free flow or just like flows off him. Like, you know, so it's he's a pleasure to watch. Like, and I'd say he must be definitely around that for that quiz question. I'd say he must be close enough to. I'm not sure. He might be around there. I'm not sure. But yeah, geez, he's that 8 points from play. That's a phenomenal going.
Did you buy any dummies off him up in the day and back in the day in DCU?
Who's that? Sorry.
Did he sell you any dummies in DCU?
I can't remember.
Well, do you think that goes against him? The fact you said it looks easy when Jack McCarron plays football, and I think then when Monaghan aren't on top, it's like, oh, Jack's doing nothing, and they hook him off, and then they don't start him. Do you know?
Yeah.
Because he's not he's not a million miles an hour sprinting.
No.
But he's beautiful flair. Does that go against him?
He's kind of player. I don't think you could ever take him off because he mightn't be playing that well, but he's probably taking two players out of the game.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if he's not doing well, there's a reason for it that he's probably double marked, I'd say. But even if he was double marked and he was quiet, you'd still leave him on because he can create something out of nothing. Do you reckon? It might be the 65th minute, and he could, in 3 or 4 minutes, he could 3 or 4 points. If something happened, if a team got men sent off or they changed their tactics, created more space somewhere. He's the kind of fellow you need in them situations because, as I said, give him the ball and he'll make something happen. If he doesn't score, he'll create something for somebody else.
Yeah, once he's in the mood, and we saw that early on, when he gets in the mood, the man is unstoppable. He's had a few injury problems down through the years. Had he injuries when he was in DCU, or how did he go for you?
It's so long ago, I can't remember, to be honest. Okay. He was playing right. He was playing, so... Yeah, you could just see that he was very young that time. That was 2013, I'd say. Yeah, 2013. Mm-hmm. So, Jesus, that's 10 years ago. So, he was only very young that time, but you could see the talent. You could see him. You could see this fellow was going to be a serious foreign in the next few years.
Did you win the Sigerson?
No, they lost to DIT in the semi-final.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't playing. That was I was brought up to DCU to play football, but actually ended up not being allowed to play because they ran that rule, the new rule. But you can only play for 2 courses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that was a bit of a ball.
Bit of controversy at the time. Disaster. We have Aidan here. A brilliant weekend for Cork, really, winning the under-20.
Yes.
All-Ireland, and they're definitely look like a common team. A very physical team was one thing that stood out for me, but some very skillful forwards as well. Ben Cunningham, for example. I suppose the biggest talking point from that one was the Offaly manager Leo O'Connor came out saying that there was a bit of cynical hurling going on from Cork. Not too many people agreed with him. Brendan Cummins in the Sunday game, Shane Dowling actually said that Cork, that they need this in their game, that this is a great sign for Cork going forward. I'd say what probably stood out for me is that Offaly were a much smaller team. They'd 7 or 8 of them were minors last year. Screeny obviously stands out. An incredible... I just listened to the cheer before the teams were named out. Never heard a cheer for an individual Offaly, they loved this team. They were so excited and they got the great start. But were you impressed by Cork's
performance? Yes, yeah. I was the cousin has been playing with him all year, so I was kind of invested in that, watching him. I was at the Munster final and against Clare, and even Nash there, Anthony Nash is a selector, so it was it was great to see that kind of, that quality or that quality player coming through again. And I think that's their third All-Ireland in 4 years now. So there's players coming through, like, and you could see, you could definitely, you could pick out the fellas that will, you could see pushing on now in the next 2 or 3 years into senior level. But yeah, like that, the last is, fair enough, the manager said a bit of cynical, like, but in fairness, Greeny took on the ball as he does and as he's good at, like, and but he's, you're not going to leave him marked through, like, you're going to try and tackle him, and unfortunately they kind of fouled him, but I wouldn't say it was cynical, it was just, they were trying to tackle him, and it just, they were frees, of course, like, but yeah, in fairness, it looked, in fairness, awfully tried their best to as supporters to push the team. Like, what turned out for the match was something, yeah, was unreal. Altogether, I'd say it was probably the biggest crowd for an under 20 final, I'd say, in a long, long time. But in fairness, Cork, and it was the same in the Munster final as well. Clare threw everything at him, awfully threw everything at him, but they kind of found a way, and I think that's obviously the message coming from the management team. Like to have Ben O'Connor, Ronan Curran, and Dean Nash, like, on a backroom team, like, they're, especially as young fella, like, you'd want to be delighted. I'd say going to training sessions, fellas, be excited to be able to be coached by that calibre of past player. Like, they're legends in Cork hurling, like, so. Yeah, no, delighted that they got over the line, and yeah, it's they're some good players there. Even though Ben O'Connor, that was his last game for the hurlers against Munster, so there is serious potential there, and hopefully they can push on now and come through, because I think there's still a huge step up from 20 to senior. Like, it's If you got 3 or 4 players out of that team to come through, you'd best be doing well, would you?
Yeah, absolutely. Was your cousin playing, or was he on the panel?
Yeah, he was playing. He started every game, but he was dropped for the last day, but he came on a sub at the end, Colin Mulch. Okay. So, yeah, it was nice to see a family member involved too. Like, you know, it's always great to have younger lads in representing Cork too. So, yeah, I know, it was great to see him.
Yeah, I'd say the thing that was maybe rubbing Leo Connor up the wrong way was the Shane Kingston tackle on Cormac Egan. I thought that should have been a red card, yeah, though, to be fair. It was a bad hit, and, you know, it was nearly as blatant a red card as you'd see. But yeah, Ben O'Connor, he's going to be a huge loss, definitely, for Cork. A hugely physical player there as well. But just last thing on that game is Ben O'Connor as a manager, he means business, doesn't he? And he doesn't take any, I'd say, no, he's not a man, yeah, that would take any bull.
Yeah, I haven't come across him too often. I've never really had a conversation with him, but like, he was with Milton there last year, or not, the year before. He won a senior hurling championship with Milton, so his CV is fairly strong now, like, and you could definitely see him involved the seniors at some stage down the next few years, I'd say, because he has the ambition, and like as I said, when you have players of that caliber that have achieved so much, like, if they say something, you listen to them, like, and you'll do what you're told, and so he has that aura about him, and yeah, and they're the fellas you need, like, Cork on the board should have fellas like that, getting them involved with younger teams, like, and getting them starting at 16, under 16, minor, 20s, bring them up through, and then when they get to, if they're lucky enough to win coming up long, then when they get to the senior, then that they've they're putting themselves into the best position to succeed in when they have their apprenticeship done, you know, that kind of way.
Definitely. Just last thing, I think we could stay talking all day here, Aidan. There's so much to talk about between your career and the weekend, but just on the Cork senior hurlers, you mentioned them there. They were, I'd say, there's maybe more positivity about them for a team that was knocked out, but they were unlucky. Two 1-point losses in a row. How
yeah,
do you reflect?
Yeah, like, that's very unlucky, to be fair. Like, the Munster Championship is so competitive, and to be that close, and like, the fine margins were unreal. Like, if Cork and Limerick drew, then Tip would have been out, and then,
and it was close. Yeah,
yeah, it was. Yeah, like, it was 1 point. So close. Like, but in fairness, Pat Ryan, excellent manager, best man for the job. Like, he's brilliant man manager, and yeah, I think he'll learn a lot from this year. I think going into next year is, like, your first year in involved is always you're learning a lot. Like, so yeah, he'll take a lot from this year, and they're still young. Like, even the last day, Hoggy and Seamus Harran, they really stood up in the last 10 minutes. But yeah, they're your senior players. Like, so you need definitely some of the younger lads, right, stepping up a bit more. Like, because they won't be around forever either, and I my opinion, I think they'll still both be there next year, even though they're coming, 34 and 35 next year, but they're still serious players, and like that, they're just great to have around, even in the setup too. Like.
You would have probably played with them.
Oh, I would, yeah. No, I've been
unbelievable to be still going as well.
Yeah. No, it's Hoggy gets his hurlies off me, you know, so he'd be doing a lot, doing the workshops, and there was a big panic on the week leading up to the Limerick game. His hurley was after break, and so I had to do a serious surgery to it. So it's made sure anyway to get that right, and thankfully it held. I was watching the game, and every time he'd be taking free, we kind of holding. I'd look at the hurley, make sure it looked okay. So. And that's a nice situation to be in, to be some bit involved in regards to making hurlies for the boys, like Shane Kingston as well making for him. So just nice to have that little aspect of being involved in the game that the boys are using the hurlies. So yeah, Hoggy seemed to work all right for Hoggy the last day anyway.
I'd say fixing Patrick Horgan's hurl, it must be like the wand from Harry Potter or something like this.
Yeah,
it's like
surgery, like this, you know, you have to really particular, like, and even there's a few screws you have to put into it, like for the crack and to add a bit of weight, like, but you'd be kind of worried then when you're putting the screw in that it'll come out the other side or the side of the hurley and all this kind of stuff. So it is nerve wracking enough at times, but thankfully so far it's been going all right.
Definitely. Yeah. Thanks a million for coming in today. That's it for this week's episode of the GA Hour, brought to you by Sports Joe and Sure 72 Hour Protection. I will chat to you again next week.
You've been listening to the GAA Hour, brought to you by Sports Joe and Sure 72 Hour Non-Stop Protection, tested to the limits. Sure, it won't let you down.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.